The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Hey, what you need to know today is going to be about the Biden crime family. But I'm going to tell you something a little different about it. I'm not sure it's contrarian, but I will admit that I was a little bit wrong. So come around for me to say that. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. What you need to know today, just a moment, you're going to get that. Go to ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Sign up there for the daily email, the daily wink, an email that goes out 8 a.m. East Coast, 5 a.m. Pacific time. Gives you everything you need to know, a lot of links and some other things. So sign up, ProAmericaReport.com. And in a few moments, we'll talk with Mark Herr. Mark Herr is at the Center for Self-Governance about a story that is growing in my mind in importance. And that is the use by law enforcement of private entities, private companies, nonprofits, universities to do their dirty work. Meaning a law enforcement and government uses, say, a list of who is anti-government or who is hate-filled. And they use a list generated by somebody privately owned, privately controlled, like the Southern Poverty Law Center, for example. And that's not okay. And the reason why it's not okay, many reasons, I might start with the Southern Poverty Law Center not being particularly even-handed or fair. But a bigger problem is the accountability when you are taking away or impacting someone's liberty is different than anything else. In other words, when you're taking somebody's liberty, when you're putting them on a list, in law school, they talked about the bundle of sticks, and the bundle of sticks was all of your different rights. And when it comes to liberty, if you're taking away someone's liberty by putting them on a list, and that's a stick. That stick is being identified and managed and controlled by a private group. That's not right. That's not right. So we'll talk about that with Mark Herr. So we'll get to that in a moment. But first, what you need to know, the news has come out that Congressman Comer and the Oversight Committee, of the U.S. House of Representatives, has dug into Joe Biden and his family and the money that they've generated. Now, first, what you need to know is elections have consequences. And by barely squeaking by and getting control of the U.S. House, the Republicans have had the ability to do oversight. They could serve subpoenas on entities and get responses. Because a lot of what it seems that they know now about Joe Biden's money and his family's money and all this different funneling in and out of money, a lot of that seems to be coming from these subpoenas. So number one, what you need to know is elections have consequences. It's a big deal. And when you have oversight, when you can get control through of what the facts are through oversight, very big deal. So that's first. Second, it looks like Congressman Comer, Chairman Comer of the Oversight Committee and the Republicans, have actually gotten the goods. They have this web of bank accounts where money is flowing from the Chinese to these corporations and then sliding out to family members, up to nine family members. And when you hear the corporations and the funneling of the money, what you don't hear, and this may come next, the Bidens may come out with an answer. You don't hear anyone try to justify. There's not a business model. There wasn't a business model. It was Joe Biden is in charge and is influential. He's in the vice presidency. He's whatever. And probably when he was a senator, they did this. And therefore, give us money and we'll spread it out. It's pretty clear now that this is a scheme, an influence peddling scheme that the Bidens did. And there are two whistleblowers that have come forward that are talking about the specifics. So this is a really big deal now. It's not just Hunter Biden, pulling it. I tell people, it's not just Hunter Biden pulling a Billy Carter, right? Billy Carter was the brother of Jimmy Carter, and he started to make a beer, Billy Beer, I think it was. And he was trying to, you know, milk the family name. And but that's not this. And it's not even the one renegade son, Hunter Biden, doing crazy things. It's a scheme that implicates the president, the current president. It's not like, oh, his family's acting badly. No, this is him actually in the middle of it, and with power and with influence, getting things done based on the control. So again, monstrous deal. Number three, what you need to know, it's foreign countries. We don't even know yet if there are some American companies, but foreign countries seems to be what they were doing. Chinese companies, Romanian companies, Serbian companies. I don't know if we'll get to the bottom of how many. So, you know, it's clearly to take the oath of office as commander in chief when you're compromised. I mean, this is exactly why you would have to have disclosure and rules on this, is because you don't want to be put in a position where your son or daughter or husband or wife can be compromised by a foreign intelligence service because of your connection to them. It's exactly what the problem is. It's stunning. All right. Finally, what you need to know, and this is where it's contrary, a little contrarian. I'm not sure it matters. I know that's crazy to say. I'm not sure it matters. What do I mean by that? I think the Democrats will circle the wagons. I think there will be some way that they maintain that this is all being spun the wrong way and ignore it. And I don't think that they'll end up being held accountable. I really don't. Now, you can argue, and we could talk about that, that somehow it's going to be politically so. I don't even think politically so. I think Joe Biden is so powerful and has so many resources right now that nobody can. And here's what you need to know. He's going to run for re-election. He's not going to yield. Not going to yield to Robert F. Kennedy getting 20% in recent polling or anybody else saying that they need to get in. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. So, as I've said to you for what, about 2 years, 3 years, the civil war going on is in the Democrat Party. It's Trump's party in the Republican Party. It's America First in the Republican Party. You can't be a neocon who wants war, war, war and succeed in the Republican Party. In the Democrat Party, though, there's a lot of people. Gavin Newsom just gave up on reparations, which is what the game that the left woke liberals were doing. And there again, it's Lucy with the football to African Americans. They say, we're going to give you cash payments, hundreds of millions of dollars. Oh, no, we're not. We care about you. We'll get you good schools. Oh, no, we won't. We care about you. We will work on criminal justice reform, civil war. And as it breaks open in the Democrat Party, the progressives stand to charge against Biden. The progressives, Bernie Sanders' wing, is going to say, you've silenced us for too long. You've shut us out for too long. We're not waiting anymore. We're not doing this anymore. And that's what's coming. So this is the opening salvo in what I predict will be a bitter, bitter Democrat Party battle. Because there's no doubt that Joe Biden is damaged. This is a real easy talking point for left, right, center. It's hard to ignore. And so therefore, you're going to have to see people come and attack. They're going to try to get, you know, when you see a wounded president, they're not going to let it sit there. This is too important. But he's not going to yield. He's not going to yield. There's no way. There's no way. Now, if it gets really ugly, my prediction, one more prediction for you. You're going to start to see people who tell the truth about 20. And somebody's going to decide finally to tell more of the truth. I have told you I've been up on Capitol Hill in lots of capacities and seen lots of what's going on with the January 6th. And same deal, back to the first point I made. What you need to know is elections have consequences, and Republicans are digging in and they're finding out about January 6th stuff that you I don't think people can believe yet. I know you're ready for it, about how fraudulent. How fraudulent the coverage and descriptions were of the select committee and the media. After that, we'll see if there's actually proof of the fact that they were really doing something terribly, terribly wrong, and that a lot of it was a kind of setup. It looks like there's some proof of that, or say it differently, some evidence of that. So what you need to know is elections have consequences. Elections have consequences, and the Republicans getting control of the House and having a chance to do some oversight, big, big deal, changing the history of the country, changing the trajectory of politics and opening up, as I said, the civil war in the Democrat Party that will be a real problem for them to manage. That's what you need to know. All right, we'll come back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Don't forget, go to proamericareport.com, proamericareport.com. Sign up for the daily email there. And also, you can go to our website, phyllisschlafly.com. All of our show links are there, standalone links, and more. We'll be back in a moment. Ed Martin, Pro America Report. Talk to you soon. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Pro America Report. You can tell it's a Monday. Next, my next guest is Mark Herr. Mark Herr came to visit me a few weeks ago when my old friend and a really great leader who's out in, everybody hears from her all the time, Tammy Nichols, is out in Idaho. And so she said, I want to introduce you to somebody. And she brought by Mark Herr. Mark Herr is at the Center for Self-Governance. If you don't know the Center for Self-Governance, you need to. You can go to centerforselfgovernance.com, a nonprofit, nonpartisan educational organization doing lots of good stuff. They dedicated that. I wrote down your things, Mark, here, your mission statement, dedicated to the advancement of stable civil society, balanced human government, and a well-educated and highly participating populace. This sounds perfect to me. So first of all, welcome, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great, Ed. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, and so the reason I brought you on, among others, I've been interested in your work, but you and I had a conversation in person when you came out here. And I should say, Mark is the co-founder of the Center for Self-Governance. He's written a number of books, too, including Speaking the Language of Liberty and a film producer. But we talked about something very specific. And, you know, it's almost like you opened my eyes. Every time I turned around, I'm still seeing it, and I'm seeing it in multiple ways. And so here's what you and I talked about. You said to me, hey, Ed, one problem is that federal law enforcement and state and local law enforcement have sort of, maybe not intentionally, but maybe intentionally, outsourced aspects of their enforcement to private entities. So you get places like the Southern Poverty Law Center or others who say, hey, so-and-so is a bad guy. He's a hate guy. He's a spreader of this or that. And it's one thing for people to use their free speech to say that about, you know, others, me. But it's another thing when their information is relied upon by the government. I know I summarized it poorly, Mark, but maybe tell us a little bit more about it and what you saw and what you see and what you worry about and why it's a problem.
Well, if you go back in history, when political opponents take over government and they start to weaponize labels, it eventually gravitates toward weaponizing government. You see this with the Catholics and the Protestants for 1,000 years in the monarchy, labeling each other heretics and witches, Puritans and Quakers in Massachusetts in the 1600s, Germans with Jews and their terrible genocide in the 20th century, and here we are in the United States. We have non-government organizations who have private definitions of extreme hate, anti-government, and they create their lists based on their definitions, which is part of their First Amendment. Call me whatever name you want. But the problem is when our federal, state, and local law enforcement then have their discretion informed by those private definitions and those private lists, how does law enforcement then affect the population? So in our country, we rely on due process, you know, that you have the ability to have your day in court, or we have equal application of the law. One definition applies to you, and that same definition applies to me, right? Well, that's not happening right now in the United States with non-government organizations such as the Southern Poverty Law Center creating a hate list and anti-government list, which they have the First Amendment right to do, but they are informing the discretion of the FBI. For example, recently an FBI whistleblower unveiled in Richmond, Virginia, that the FBI department there was relying on an internal document on the relying on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate list to inform their discretion for tripwire and human source, using human sources to infiltrate people practicing their religious freedom in Richmond, Virginia. And that's very troubling to organizations like myself, Center for Self-Governance, because we are listed on Southern Poverty Law Center's anti-government list, which is that word anti-government means that we hate government. We're against government. And I've been trying to make the case, Ed, for to DC, to Washington, DC and Congress these last 3 months. Our organization is not anti-government. That's why our mission statement is stable civil society, balanced government, and an informed population. Whether you're Democrat or Republican doesn't matter to us. And so how we got on the list, I don't know. We just making the case that we're not anti-government. So I feel like a Quaker. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm not a heretic. I'm not a witch. Please don't drown me. And so when it gets into government, that's the problem. And that's the concern. That's the alarm we're sounding, Ed, is that, you know, when organizations like ours get labeled anti-government or hate or whatever, and that government, that non-government organization is exercising the First Amendment, that's fantastic. When they start informing the discretion of law enforcement, however, how does that affect our due process, our day in court? How does that affect our equal protection of the law? How many lists does SPLC have that the FBI and 50 state law enforcements and their local law enforcements around the country are using? How does that affect my civil rights? How does that affect my students' civil rights? How do we defend ourselves? I don't feel like I'm innocent until I'm proven guilty. I feel like I'm guilty and now I have to prove my innocence. Everything just seems kind of backwards with what I'm describing to your listeners. And I would like to resolve that. I want to fix that.
Well, and we're talking with Mark Herr and centersforselfgovernance.com, center for selfgovernance.com. There's no S on that. Mark, when I was telling you 20 years ago, I ran the election board in St. Louis. I worked for the governor of Missouri. And I guess my question is, it feels like this moved dramatically in 20 years, like more than it ever did. Meaning, I don't know whether it's the outsourcing. And, you know, look, on one level, you say, if somebody's helping the government do their job well, you know, we like that. I mean, we like when somebody's, you know, if you're honest and in the right direction, maybe right. We like that.
But the thing that
I think you made me think about was, it's one thing if you help the government, say, promote the Constitution, promote some issue, promote something. It's another thing if you're doing things that impact people's liberty, right? That's the point where we've got to be more careful, because what people are basically saying is, you know, let me back up. One of the problems with outside groups doing some of this stuff is you get removed from the accountability, right? So I can't tell the Southern Poverty Law Center how dumb I think their criteria is, or how corrupt they look to my eyes. I don't know them internally. I know they have tons of money offshore in the Caymans, and I know that they just pick willy nilly, but they're not being audited. It doesn't look like they're not being investigated. So when somebody uses them, I can't make them accountable. Whereas I can tell my congressman, hey, the local FBI office did X in Richmond. Find out what that means, right? I mean, that's the problem. Yeah.
Yes. We absolutely, and that's why we've been going to DC, interacting with the weaponization of the federal government committee, not because we're going on a witch hunt against the SPLC's First Amendment rights. Absolutely not. It's because we're trying to figure out where is the due process? Where's the equal protection of the law? Why are we using private definitions based on private lists? Did Congress authorize those lists? How many lists are there? For example, I have a former airline employee who alleges that the TSA, in consulting their no-fly list, references the SPLC's private list. And that's a problem for American citizens who travel and they have four S's on their plane tickets. They're like, who do you call? What judge do you go? What court do you go to?
Right.
How do you? Okay. And then the other issue is that we've just discovered with the Richmond thing is that the FBI informs the discretion of state law enforcement and local law enforcement through their Beyond the Lookouts, their BOLOs. And on it, if you're an American citizen that is on their list that you don't know, it literally says, don't advise them that they're on a terrorist watch list. They may be a member of a terrorist organization. That's like, Ed, that's in the United States of America. Like, is Center for Self-Governance, because we're labeled by SPLC anti-government, does that mean the FBI's discretion now indicates that we are terrorists and a TSG is now a terrorist organization? And I'm like, I just want to find checks and balances, figure out how we inject due process into that equation, and absolutely not interrupt SPLC's First Amendment right to label and call and have all kinds of lists if they want to. But somewhere in between there, Ed, there should be a check and a balance. And that's all we're asking for is accountability. I mean, would everybody be okay with me creating a list and informing FBI to go after, say, Antifa or Proud Boys or even SPLC and their employees?
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but Mark, what happens when the, I often refer to it as, on the show as the narrative machine. It's big government working with big tech and big media to enforce a narrative. Now, I can add to that sort of the now on the front end, big government is now being fed by these outside groups and they're funded by others and all that. But you know, part of the damage is because the big tech and big media can't be accountable. And I guess there are remedies under the law to go and say, you said this about me. But practically, and I'm reminded of this situation in Texas in the last few days, there's been two terrible, terrible tragedies, killings by animals, people that did, it looks like intentionally, both Hispanic and both, I think, have been reported as interested in white supremacy and the ideology. And it's a lie. I have to say, I think it's a lie. And if it's not, it's kind of the strangest thing to have someone linked to. But it will never be re-litigated in the mind of Americans who just heard, there was a shooting in Texas and it was done by someone who was interested in white supremacy. You know what I mean? In other words, you don't get to go get your reputation back in the modern era. You don't even get to get back the narrative.
That is absolutely correct. And that's why we're going and participating both at the federal and the state levels with the weaponization of the federal government committee under the judiciary. And the chairman is Jim Jordan. And the committee members are very interested in the evidence that we're bringing regarding what you're describing. It's like once you've been damaged, the perception that you're a heretic and a witch is very, the stigma that is created by that weaponized label is one thing. When it becomes weaponized government, where now the FBI is going to tripwire and confidential human source and access people practicing their First Amendment religious freedoms in Richmond, Virginia, that's another thing. So we kind of separate this into two components, the weaponization of the labels and the weaponization of government. On the weaponization of labels, we obviously have a defamation, libel, slander, courtroom approach. But how do you recover the damages there? I think there are some litigation things we can do both at the federal and the state level regarding this idea that, yes, you have a First Amendment right to say whatever you want, but you also have a limitation on the damage caused by your speech. So that's the libel, slander, et cetera. But we can add one more element. If you're going to be used by the executive branch or law enforcement entities, there should be, do you have qualified immunity because you're hiding behind the First Amendment? Or do you lose your qualified immunity because you're a state actor now? You're a state operative. You're functioning as government, like the Central Intelligence Agency, providing intelligence to the FBI regarding all these extremists that we've labeled according to our private definition. On the label side, I think we can go further than this, the defamation and the slander by adding some protections to say, if you're going to provide this kind of intelligence and information based on your private labels and law enforcement is going to use it and it becomes a weapon, then the person who experiences it, victimized by it, maybe,
right,
then they should be able to challenge that in court or seek remedy with a fact finder to have say, listen, Your Honor, can we take their First Amendment is reduced here because they're acting under state operative sanction. Let's give them that label and then we can pursue it from that perspective. I think that would be one way to help to limit this and also bring some balance back to the equation. On the government side,
that's
a whole nother ball game. And it's really important for the American people, Democrat, Republican, independent, non-voting, whoever, to understand that once you turn government into a weapon against your people, it doesn't end well. You end up with Jews being carted off. You have Puritans killing Quakers. Catholics, you know, imprisoning Protestants and vice versa, that kind of thing happens. And we can point to that in history. It's not as though that's an extreme or conspiratorial position. The key is that right now there are things we can do by asking Congress to identify, well, how many lists are there? How many of those are non-government lists?
Right, exactly. Yep.
How many are public lists, or I would say executive branch created lists? And of all of those lists that have been created, how many were authorized by Congress?
Yeah.
And the same would be true at the state level, because now I've discovered in states like Washington, for example, they have internal executive branch lists not authorized by the state legislature. And so we're starting to look into those lists. Who created those lists? Where's the source of the authority for those lists? If you're going to have the list, here's another thing that people can do is ask the question, am I on the list? And if I am, what is the due process to get off the list? Can I go to a judge? Do I call my congressman? Is there 1-800 FBI list? You know, what is the process, the due process that applies to me if I am on a list? Mm-hmm. Should Americans be notified that they're on a list? Should the list be private because of, you know, so-called national security? I know of a stay-at-home mom who has 6 kids, and she has 4 S's when she travels across the United States. She's so terrified to travel the United States because of the humiliation that she has had to go through. And what did she do? Nothing. She's never been charged. She's never been put in a court. There's never been a trial. She's never been found guilty by a jury of her peers, Ed. But she has 4 S's. She doesn't know how. She doesn't know who. She doesn't know who to ask. She doesn't know where to go. So you know what she does? She doesn't travel.
Hmm. Wow.
And you know what, Ed? You know what, Ed? That shouldn't happen in the United States.
No, that shouldn't happen in America. No, it's true. Well, listen, Mark, very, very helpful. Thank you for the time, first of all. And again, centerforselfgovernance.com. You can check it out there. There's a lot of training series there. There's films. There's media to check out. And Mark Kerr, you can reach him through the website, too. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. We'll have you back again soon.
Thank you so much, Ed.
All right. We will take a break, and I will put up on social media links to all of those that I mentioned. And we'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. I have to admit to the listeners that I did not watch a single moment of the coronation. I kept thinking that, oh, it's going to be on and maybe I'll check it out. I just never did. And I guess I'm an American, so it's not that big a deal, but I know some of my friends and some others were watching it, and I certainly saw it tracking, and it's kind of, jarring for someone like me who had never seen anyone else be, king or queen of England for so long to see a new, monarch. So, but we have an expert. We have an expert. Ted Malik, of course, is a businessman all over the world and has taught at Oxford and probably taught at Cambridge too, but has taught in England, and lived in London and been all over the UK and the British scene. So let's see what he has to say about this. So Ted, welcome back. How are you?
I'm very well, Ed. And unlike you, I had a coronation party at my house. We recorded the 8 hours of the entire ceremony.
Uh-huh.
Had about 25 people, women with very outrageous hats. We had tea and scones and English sandwiches of cucumber.
Okay, on Saturday? Is that when it was, or Sunday?
Yes, it was on Saturday.
So, I mean, it's all, I was going to joke and say Americans were getting ready for the Kentucky Derby that evening, and we were doing the coronation. All right, so... But you, yeah, I'm watch this. I'm going to get myself in trouble. You don't remember when Queen Elizabeth was coronated, though, do you?
Oh, I do very well. She was coronated in 1953, and I was born in 1952.
That's what I was going to say. I knew it was too close.
Yeah.
All right, but she was. We've talked before about her when she passed away. She was a dominant figure who was, pretty close to universally respected. And now you have to transition in the modern era to someone else. So first of all, can it work?
Probably not with this particular king, but the monarchy goes on. I would say that royalism, or, you know, the idea of a monarchical rule is less and less popular. It has less and less support, even in a place like the United Kingdom. I'm not saying it will be overthrown tomorrow, but it's very likely that it's in its decline.
And this king probably makes it tougher, right? I mean, it feels to me like
he's not all that much loved. You have the scenario around Diana. You have this whole episode with his two sons, and particularly with the spare son. And he has a number of views that I think one commentator described them as weird.
Right.
He doesn't want to be called defender of the faith, for instance. He wants to be called defender of the faiths, plural.
Oh, really?
Which is, of course, not what the King of England or of the United Kingdom is supposed to be, who is, in fact, the head of the Church of England. But it was an impressive ceremony. So I wanted to say one thing very positive.
Yeah.
And then one thing, not so much negative, but from the American perspective. So I would say, you know, this ceremony consisted, if you didn't see it, or even if you did, maybe I could explain it to you, of six segments. You had the recognition, which was very touching, when the little choir boy says to the king, you know, what is your purpose? And he says, to serve. Then you have the oath, where he takes his oath. And during that particular period, he kisses the Holy Bible, which I found very uplifting. Then you have something very secretive, which no one knows about. So I'll tell you what it is.
Great.
And they put a cloth around the entire front sanctuary or altar. And you wonder, what the heck is going on in there? And he's changing his clothes, and there's some singing, mostly in Latin. And what's happening is called the anointing. And they actually anoint the new king, where he pledges his faith to God, with holy oil. Now, that is not on television, so you don't see it. But that is a major part. You could argue of the entire ceremony. The next, of course, is the investiture, where his crown, this very, very shiny and heavy purple object, is put on his head by the Archbishop of Canterbury, by the way. So, and then you have the next is the enthronement, where he sits on this gold throne, takes the scepter in one hand and the orb in the other, both of which have crosses on their tops. You know, the secularists might not quite
understand. Not like that.
And then you have the homage, which is the closing, where people pay homage to the king, and choirs sing, you know, out their songs. So there's a great deal of symbolism in all this. But what I'd like to say and remind your listeners especially is that this is a religious ceremony.
Right.
And it has very deep, deep, deep meaning. And it's a worship service. It's held in Westminster Abbey. It's presided over by the Archbishop, as I said. It's an explicitly Christian worship service. It does have participants from different religions. I thought it was very interesting that the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, who is a serious Hindu, read the first chapter of Paul's letter to the Colossians, which, you know, in my view, is a text probably more than any other in the entire Bible, proclaims the lordship of Christ over all of creation. But that was a nice touch. There were prayers said by Buddhists, Jewish, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, in Welsh, in the Scottish Gaelic, in Irish. The Catholic cardinal was there. It was an unbelievably, you know, powerful ceremony. But it is primarily, to remind us, based on 1 Kings 1, verse 39, where he is actually anointed, which is put to music by Handel in 1772. It basically marks out this whole lineage of the kings of Israel, Saul, David, Solomon, as the ones adopted and anointed by God himself. So you know, for those of us who come from a religious tradition, who actually understand this litany and particularly this church service, this mass, in effect, it is a very powerful thing to witness.
We're talking again with Ted Malik, our friend Ted Malik, who writes so frequently and speaks on his columns. And you mentioned off the air, I don't think I'm telling anything out of school. You're headed over sometime soon to England. It'll be more interesting when you get back to hear what you thought. Is the death and the coronation, are they working together to sort of build the English esprit de corps or a patriotism, do you think? Because it wouldn't be a bad thing.
No, it wouldn't be a bad thing. So I think it's a short-lived thing. Certainly there was a lot of affection for the queen and actually for her husband as well, who passed away before her. I don't think that this enthusiasm will extend too far into the future. Britain is a second-rate power. It's part of the special relationship, actually not so special anymore. It dropped out of the European Union, as you know, in the Brexit, and its economy is pretty much in shambles. So, even the countries, and there used to be many in the Commonwealth who had the monarch as their own head of state, not of government, head of state, are dropping like flies. A number have already gone. I understand Barbados went recently, Jamaica's the next to go. Canada did say that it would stay, so that maybe is significant. I would say, though, as an American, and some of the other comment I was going to make about the coronation itself, I took a very deep breath and I said, how pleased I am to be an American. If you remember, in 1776, we got rid of our, King George III and put in George Washington and installed a republic, if we can keep it, according to Benjamin Franklin. We have kept it so far, at least. And a republic is not a monarchy.
Right.
So it doesn't cost $125 million for a ceremony. We don't have a king, clearly. We have, a democracy based on Republican features, which is not the same thing as a direct democracy. But
right.
I'm going to remind you, three times George Washington was offered to be made king of the United States, and three times he turned it down.
Yeah, that's great. Actually, that's very helpful at that moment. All right, Ted Malik, I'm out of time. That's perfect. Thank you for the update. We'll look forward to catching up with you when you're back from England. Ted Malik, everybody, as always, insightful on what's happening. We'll take a break and be right back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back here to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height stepping into the booth to fill in real quick for Mr. Ed Martin, wrap up the show today. And this is great. Normally, it feels like we have just a few seconds together, you and I, whenever I jump in here to fill in. But we've got almost 2 minutes today. So I'd like to unpack something real quick and let you know about an upcoming event that I would love for your assistance in promoting. Ed would love for your assistance in promoting. And I tell you what, it is not only good. It won't be only good just for you and your own edification, but for America itself. Trust me. So with that in mind, mark your calendars. June 20th, Tuesday, June 20th in the evening, we will be broadcasting our Collegians Leadership Summit, Phyllis Schlafly Collegians Leadership Summit. This is connected to our day job, Ed and I, the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. We will be broadcasting an incredible program that evening. This is obviously geared toward college students, toward our collegians, our up-and-coming leaders, but we're not going to turn anybody away. If you want to come and be educated, be motivated, and learn about, our theme this year, the power of patriotism, you will want to be a part of this program. So, get on the email list. You will get details about that starting this week. And if you head over to proamericareport.com, not only will you be able to get all the past segments and all the last podcasts and standalone segments from our great guests, but you can get on the email list there and hear about wonderful things coming up in the future that we're going to have fantastic guests as well. So
With all that in mind, we will wrap up the show here. Thanks for being a part of it. Head to proamericareport.com. Thank you to Ed for being such a great host and interviewer. Thank you to Noah Dingley, our primary producer, for keeping the trains running. And we will look forward to seeing you back here on the Pro America Report.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.